The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up and coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com. Hello, welcome back to the Scouted podcast with me, Joe Donoghue. I'm joined again by Scouted analyst, UEFA Youth League aficionado, and curator of the greatest individual player scouting database not yet affiliated to a professional club, Lou Davies. A pleasure to chat again, mate. Youth League is back, and that's the focus of this episode, a competition which doesn't get near the level of coverage anywhere else that is put into it at Scouted. And truly one of the most interesting, most exciting youth tournaments, given it does mirror the UEFA Champions League and its new format this year. Past winners, of course, include Chelsea twice, Barcelona twice, FC Red Bull Salzburg, Real Madrid, FC Porto and Benfica, which will come as no surprise to those familiar with the Cobham, La Masia, La Fabrica, Seychelles and Red Bull Academy setups. But in recent seasons, the Youth League has been won by AZ Alkmaar of the Netherlands and last year, Greece's Olympiakos. So really proving that talent is everywhere, both in coaching terms and certainly on the playing side, which is, of course, where our focus lies. We've already enjoyed match day one in this season's Youth League. And if you'd like a comprehensive written breakdown of this season, I'd urge you to sign up to Scouted Notebook, where in-depth match day roundups will be posted week on week from Lou, Steve, a newish signing, Jake, who's joined the two of you permanently after many, many years balancing a utility role with a full-time position elsewhere. The opening match day then, highlights included, sons of former club favourites and iconic internationals, the next big thing coming out of Bayern Munich, another striker for Red Bull Salzburg's long succession, an English 14-year-old breaking all the records, as well as matchups like Monaco-Barcelona, Feyenoord, Leverkusen, and more. Where to begin then, Lou?
I think we should begin with the UEFA Youth League in general, I think. Just sing its praises, basically. It's not a competition that's particularly well covered in the general media, I wouldn't say. I think what we do at Scouted is pretty unique in terms of, as you said in that intro, in terms of the depth and just breadth of coverage that we offer. But I think more people should watch it, should get into it, should take notice of it, should be excited about it. This is the sort of mini Champions League in many ways. It's the complete mirror image to the senior Champions League. The same teams are playing against the same teams earlier in the day. This is the first platform for a lot of Europe's best talent. The really good ones tend to pass through it pretty quickly. Lamine Yamal is perhaps the biggest under 23 or under 21, or in his case, under 18 star in world football right now. And he only played about 5 games. Most of them were off the bench as a 15-year-old, 16-year-old. So they tend to pass through pretty quickly if they're good enough. Some of them will just go straight into the seniors. But yeah, I think people should watch it because it's fun, it's exciting. You get a first glimpse of the new generation of talent. And as you mentioned in that intro, it's quite unpredictable as well. The last two winners are AZ Alkmaar and Olympiakos. Olympiakos were a complete surprise. Last season, they played in the semi-final, which also had Nantes from France, which is another surprise. Both of them came through the domestic champions path, which is like an alternate route into the competition for the unsurprisingly the domestic champions in the under 18 league or under 19 league. So yeah, it's exciting, unpredictable. I'm not going to say it's a thrill a minute. A lot of the games can be quite tepid, can be quite dirgy, if that's a word. But yeah, it's exciting and I'm excited for the new season.
Yeah, it's certainly exciting for the reason of, you know, discovering new players. And just having a quick skim through the match day one updates that you guys wrote for the Scouted Notebook. Obviously, there's a few names that you know, scouting heads will have come across before. But even someone like yourself coming across players that you haven't come across before, you know, the likes of, where was it? Fabian Merian, a 2008 central defender, with PSV Eindhoven, for example. You know, he's someone who, you know, you came across for the first time during this match day. And of course, that's a natural thing because, you know, it's impossible to cover absolutely everything. So there will always come a time when you are watching a potential future international, for example, for the first time. And I think a lot of people would be surprised at just the remarkable number of players, maybe not all internationals, but certainly those who go on to have very, very, very strong careers, that their first, you know, their first steps they've had in youth league, particularly if they're coming through the academy of a, you know, a Champions League team. Staying with obviously the topic of Champions League teams and players coming through, we're talking about their internationals now. It's rare to have full internationals competing in the youth league, and if they are, they tend to be for, you know, the lesser nations, maybe the ones who aren't qualifying for major international tournaments at senior level. But in the Bayern Munich game, the in which they played Jinko Dinamo Zagreb from Croatia, there was one. Oh, there was two actually. And there was one in particular who really caught your eye, and there's a fantastic write-up complete with lots and lots of images and screen grabs from that game, just really highlighting and showcasing his ability and what he's very good at. The thing that stood out for me was that this player, who Lou is going to go and tell us all about, he attempted 14 dribbles in this game and completed 9 of them, which is pretty good going.
Yeah, his name's Adam Aznew. It should be familiar to most Scouted podcast listeners or readers or anyone that just engages with our content, because we speak about him a lot, we talk about him a lot, we write about him a lot. In the Youth League Roundup at the end of last season that we did on this podcast, I think Stevie picked him out as his favourite player of last season's tournament. So that sort of shows the pedigree that he has. And as you say, Bayern rocked up with two senior internationals in an under-19 league, which is pretty unheard of. I can't remember an example of this happening ever before. I think I can maybe remember a couple where one team, where a team has one player, like you say, maybe a player from a lesser nation. But for them to have Adam Aznew, who's a recently capped senior Morocco international, and then the explosive Nestori Irankunda, who they've just signed from Australian football, it's pretty good going. They're showing off a little bit, I think. But yeah, in just coming back to Aznew, this was a game that sort of just sums him up. I wasn't particularly high in his first half. I thought the first half was a bit sloppy in terms of what he was doing. On the ball, he was perhaps doing a bit too much. Then against it, he struggled a bit defensively, especially in like these messier situations on transitions, which basically that's all Dinamo Zagreb had. But then the second half, he just completely took over. I think the spaces opened up a bit more for him. Zagreb tired in terms of their pressing, and Aznew just came to life. He just took over the game and does what he does. You mentioned the dribbling. That's probably his standout aspect as a player. That's probably what he does best. He put 14 dribbles in this game. I think he completed 9, I think it was, if I remember correctly. But he's just unbelievably good at escaping 1v1 in deeper areas. He has this sort of ability to roll and slide and just smoothly move away from players in 1v1 situations deeper, which just breaks open the game. If you press him, you're just playing into his hands, basically. That's what he wants. Come and press me and I'll just slip past you and I'll drive into 30, 40, 50 yards of space that you're leaving behind. And then that also then translates into the final third, where he's a 1v1 threat. He's a left footer that can slide inside into inside channels, but can also go on the outside. We saw it quite a few times in this game, and then he's topped it all off with a pretty extraordinary goal that at first glance looked like a fluke. he was sort of in this typical crossing position. He got his head up and sort of just smacked the ball, and it went straight into the top corner behind the goalkeeper. It looked like a fluke, but then on the replays, on the reverse angles, I think you can actually see him getting his head up, spotting the goalkeeper cheating a little bit, coming off his line, and he just rifles it in from a really acute angle from a fair distance as well. He's not as if he's in the box. He's from like a typical crossing position. And he just rifles it into the top corner. And that was sort of just put the cherry on the cake of what was a really impressive performance in the end. And just something that just sums up his talent and his profile and his potential.
Yeah, so as you say, he's 18 years old. He's a full Moroccan international now. You know, represented by one of the biggest agencies in the world. He's playing regularly for Bayern's Zwei sides in the regional Liga in sort of the lower tiers in Germany, as well as, you know, being, I mean, a proper standout at youth league level, which is still, you know, given that he's 18, is absolutely fine. He's eligible to play in there. You know, he's someone who came through, or at least transited through, the Barcelona youth system at La Masia before moving to Bayern's under-17s a couple of years ago, having been born in Spain to Moroccan parents. But just looking ahead to the future, with Asnu, obviously we're quite high on him. And perhaps that's why, you know, you were maybe a little bit underwhelmed by his first half in this youth league opener against Zagreb, against Dinamo, sorry. Because, you know, we've come to expect him to be, you know, one of the best, and should be one of the best, certainly at this level, certainly amongst his age mates and peers. But what can we sort of expect from him from a senior football perspective? Because, you know, he's been in and around, again, as much as I hate to use that phrase, he's been sort of in and around the first team setup on occasion, you know, training wise and that sort of thing, but not quite yet making those squads. You know, is it perhaps a little bit too soon to see him there?
I think it's only too soon, just in terms of the fact that Bayern have players ahead of him. If they didn't quite have that Alphonso Davies profile ahead of him, I think we'd see him playing minutes pretty much now. He did feature a lot in pre-season. He was pretty much with the first team for the entirety of it under Vincent Kompany. He was with the first team squad under Thomas Tuchel before that. Tuchel was the first coach to bring him up, along with Javier Fernandez, another favourite of ours from this Bayern Youth League team. He wasn't playing in this round, coincidentally, but I hope that we get to see him. But yeah, I think looking ahead for Asnu, I think what he offers is that sort of game-breaking talent as a fullback, which clubs love, especially at the elite level. He's the sort of guy that can change a game from deeper areas. He can give coaches a variety of different weapons in terms of where you can place him on the pitch, what you can tell him to do, how you can use him, how he can hurt teams. And I think the mentioning Alphonso Davies, his contract situation or future, it looks like he might go to Real Madrid. And I think Asnu then, in a year's time, is pretty much well placed to come up straight away and make an immediate impact in the first team. He is that sort of level of talent. The thing that I've liked to see is that he's definitely filled out into his frame a bit. I think if you listen back to our last Youth League podcast, Stevie says that he's quite undersized, but I'd say now, 3-4 months on, he's looking like a pretty big boy. Like, he isn't some small little nuggety thing. He's quite slender, tall, lean. And again, once he fills it into that frame, I think you'll see like another step of power come into his game, and like the world's his oyster then. There's no ceiling on what he can do, I don't think. I think he has everything then. That physicality, that athleticism, that change of tempo. And then he has a really high-class technical game to make the most of that. So yeah, Asnu, massively one to watch. He probably should be getting first team minutes soon. But Bayern's squad is pretty stacked, and it's just the way it is.
Yeah, and just to round off the Asnu discussion, you know, it's obviously we've gone into quite some depth on him there, but I can only urge people to get to the Scouted Notebook to really take in the the graphics and the imagery that is attached to sort of Asnu's write-up from this match day one, because you know, it has obviously the angle, a very precise camera angle of that goal, which he managed to score, which I really like. I'm assuming that's been done at your hand, Lou, as well as, you know, heat maps, is stats from that game, and as well a link to the shortlist, the Scouted shortlist, with Asnu on there, which I believe was that Steve or yourself who wrote that last month?
Steve, I think.
Yes. Yeah, the shortlist being sort of the quick, digestible way to get to know football's, you know, hottest property, you know, as told by, you know, the scouted analysts and scouts that we have, who've watched them, basically. Moving on to another game that was played this past week in the Youth League, and it'll be no surprise to long-time listeners or long-time followers of Scouted that we're going to Austria. And that is to cover someone at Red Bull Salzburg who has, there's quite a history of players of his ilk and players who've had a very, very similar pathway coming through at Salzburg. Or rather, Salzburg being their finishing school is probably the more appropriate way of putting it. Edmund Baidu, a 2006 born forward, playing originally out of Ghana, but now with Salzburg, playing up top with, is it the Austrian youth international Tajiri?
It is indeed. He was an impressive player at the Under 17 Euro this past summer.
Yes, I remember him. He's playing up front with him for the youth league side, he's pulling up trees. I think it's fair to say. And again, another one who's kind of come through that, you know, Africa to Scandinavia route, and then, because of Salzburg's resources, you know, no hiding behind the fact that they're backed by an energy drink conglomerate, they're able to spend, I mean, sums which just simply would not be palatable for clubs at a similar level, who are willing to take risks on players. But Lou, I'll let you take it away with the rundown on Baidu and what you got from his performance against Sparta Prague in this match they won.
Basically, they've done it again. that's all you need to say about it, and we'll just move on. As many will be aware, Red Bull Salzburg are pretty much this finishing school of strikers that have this very specific sort of profile that that has included the likes of Erling Haaland, Patson Daka, Karim Konate is in the first team now, Benjamin Sesko. The list can go on and on and on. Junior Adamu at Freiburg, Roko Simic, like you could just reel them off at a considerable rate and just keep going for like 30 minutes. But
Karim Adeyemi, slightly different, but same but yeah, different.
Exactly. Like I can't even remember them. There's so many. But Baidu just looks like the next one up. Like I, as soon as I watched him, first time watching him, which as you said at the start of the pod, this is why the Youth League's exciting, because you're just getting eyes on completely new players. First time watching him, first 5 minutes, and I just, the first thing I wrote on my notes was, they've done it again. they spent quite a bit to get him, which is something to take note of. Salzburg do tend to spend quite a bit on these sort of young emerging talent. But when they do spend that money, you know that they're sort of buying in the right places, they're getting the right players, and the player's pretty good. Just the way he was playing was just typically Salzburg. He was playing in that front two with Tajiri that you mentioned, with a supporting 10 behind in that narrow 4-3-1-2 sort of shape. In this game, it was more of a 3-4-1-2, which is quite interesting, a bit different to what they normally do. But Baidu was just that outlet, that unbelievable bundle of energy and excitement and electricity that was pressing, harrying, dribbling, stretching in behind, giving that outlet for the longer balls over the top, giving that sort of just, yeah, all right, I'm a midfielder, I'm in trouble, I'll just spin it in now, turn them around, 30-yard pass over the top, and Baidu will just get to it. His first half was electric. He set up the first goal for Tajiri with a Sulzbach pass over the top, and he gets the ball just before the goalkeeper flicks it over the top, and then he's chasing onto it. The angle's narrowing really quickly, and he has the presence of mind then just to square it to Tajiri rather than trying to finish on like an off-balanced, weak foot finish from a really tight angle. That impressed me. But yeah, he just gave that relentless outlet for Salzburg, which is a feature of the game that they direct. This is how they play, and he just fits the bill so easily. I'm glad that you mentioned the Africa to Scandinavia route, because I think he's just another example of that pathway that's been so prolific over the past 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, wherever it is. Salzburg signed him from Sogndal, I'm not sure how to say it, but they're in the second tier of Norwegian football. He only joined them in March, I think it was, and he'd already made a €3 million move to Salzburg at the end of August. So his trajectory has been really quick, which is pretty typical of what the Africans tend to do in Scandinavia. They tend to come in, make a pretty immediate impact and go to a higher level straight away. So Baidu is just another example of that, of the value of that pathway, which is interesting. It's something we've spoken about quite a bit before. But yeah, he was just so fun, so electric, and I'm really excited to watch him for the rest of this tournament, because I think he probably will stick with his team like Karim Konate did when he first joined from ASEC Mimosas a couple of years ago. So he can have a similar impact too. Yeah, exciting. Baidu, just another one for Salzburg. They've just done it again.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the route that he's taken from Sogndal, first of all, he was managed by, I think it's Tor-Andre Flo, the ex-Chelsea, Sunderland, Leeds, and God knows who else he played for, striker. I tell you what, in this recent trend of Barclays men, he comes under the Barclays men, doesn't he? Tor-Andre Flo. He also played for MK Dons. Would you fancy that? yeah, coming through. And it's such a leap, you know, for a player. It's such a risk as well, you know, going to Norway. And in not even the, you know, the elite Syrian. He's going to the second division. And obviously has done incredibly well. That exponential rise is something we have seen recently. Obviously, it doesn't happen to all of them, but you only need to look at the contract that Red Bull Salzburg put in front of Baidu, which runs until June 2029, that says, yes, we are fully convinced of this player's talent. And, you know, he was coming from he joined Sogndal at the beginning of the Scandinavian season, which is what, like February, March time?
Yeah, March.
March. I mean, before long, it's what, he's been there 4 or 5 months, played 20-odd games, got 15-odd goal contributions, and he was on his way again.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. He was a player that I had never watched, but I'd heard of just because of that sort of prowess that he had in the second division. These players aren't complete unknowns. They do tend to get picked up on pretty quickly by even just hobbyists on Twitter that are good at spotting talent like that. So I'm not saying that Salzburg have just uncovered a complete diamond out of nowhere, but just in terms of that game profile, just the way he suits the Salzburg way, it just clicks. It just looks right. And he will be, well, I wouldn't say will, because a lot can happen, but I think 95% likely that he probably will be the next big sale coming out of Salzburg in 2-3 years' time.
Very, very interesting, yeah. And a big statement of big statement there, in fact, just from you. We're kind of glossing over the fact that in this game you also had the likes of Valentin Sulzbacher in midfield, who we've obviously watched before, youth international tournaments, Tajiri as well, who was very impressive, very imposing at that under 17 Euros over the summer. You know, just in general, that Red Bull Salzburg game, a 3-2 win over Sparta Prague. What did you make of the game in general, just aside from the Baidu notes?
It was fun. It was sort of end to end. The first 5, 10, 15 was very frantic, especially by Salzburg. They were just doing what Salzburg do, putting Sparta in the ringer a little bit. Just buzzing around the pitch, pressing, turning the ball over, playing direct, getting behind their back three. It sort of settled then into a bit more of a pattern. Sparta looked decent. It's obviously hard when you're just one player, one person trying to cover 22 players plus, 10 substitutes. So I didn't take quite as many notes on their players as I'd have liked. But there were some good goals in it, which has been a feature of the first match day of the UEFA Youth League. And I'm glad that you mentioned Valentin Sulzbacher, because, again, he's a sort of quite unheralded prospect that doesn't quite have the prowess of someone like Baidu coming through. But I was really impressed by him in midfield. He's really tall, which straight away catches your eye. You see him, he's probably about 6'3", and he's just roaming around midfield, sliding about, getting on the ball in deeper phases, playing more often than not on the first touch, just bouncing the ball away out from pressure, really good awareness, good control in what he was doing in terms of doing that, just bouncing passes around, keeping the play moving, finding the free man. And then he had that bite then to win the ball back, which was sort of Declan Ricey. I think I mentioned Rice in my write-up, but he has that sort of, when you watch Rice, when he tackles, he's like a piston. His leg just comes in and just jabs the ball away really quickly, like really forcefully. And Sulzbacher had that sort of similar technique, which caught my eye. And he was just doing good midfield things. I think in the modern game, we get bogged down a little bit on the way certain teams play. Everything's very formulaic, very choreographed. But Sulzbacher was just doing stuff that could translate to League Two level in England, or he could play at Premier League level. He was being a proper midfielder, being adaptable to the situation. He wasn't set in one sort of way, one very specific way. Like he was happy enough just to spin the ball around and just give it to Baidu on the break if he was under pressure. Just little bits like that, little details like that, which I liked in terms of that portability to different styles, different leagues, different countries, wherever you want. So yeah, probably doesn't have the pedigree that others do, but he's definitely one that I'll be keeping an eye on in this tournament and going further on into his career.
Just as a little window into the notebook write-ups on Youth League, it's not overly stats heavy. It's very very qualitative, and it feels as though Lou and Steve and Jake are speaking to you just about a player that they've watched. It can be very informal, and the bit that I most liked from this week's or that last week's roundup was a bit on Sulzbacher, and it was, I thought I had some notes on Sulzbacher from last season's UEFA Youth League, but it turns out I hadn't. I've probably mixed them up with one of Salzburg's numerous other giraffe-sized midfielders that have played in this tournament over the years. I think that's entirely fair enough. It was also a little bit funny, and I think it was the perfect reflection of that. Yes, they're not hugely data-heavy scout reports. Sometimes they are just like your mate speaking to you about, you know, an interesting player that they came across. But yeah, we should probably get onto one of the English sides or one of the British sides in this year's competition. And there was a pretty good reason to discuss Arsenal. I mean, I know that obviously the senior game was dominated by that David Raya penalty double save and a 0-0 draw. But as we've seen quite a bit in Italian versus English youth league matchups in recent years, that the Italians, maybe because of the Primavera setup and there not being a 21s setup in Italy, and maybe the fact that a lot of their young players do go to Serie B and Serie C at younger ages, they have seemed to be a bit more advanced than their English counterparts. Atalanta beat Arsenal 4-1 in this youth league opener, but it was for the inclusion of a 14-year-old who almost broke the age record for the youth league. Lou, tell us more about him and also about the game in general, whether I've got it completely wrong with my assessment of the Italy versus England dichotomy there.
Yeah, well, firstly, I'll have to say that I didn't watch the game. The game wasn't broadcast anywhere, so I can't really speak about the actual game, but I can speak about Max Downman a little bit. As you say, a 14-year-old making his youth league debut, which is an under-19 competition, so he's technically playing 5 years up, which, straight away, very impressive. he would be the youngest ever debutant, but some 14-year-old usurped him a day before playing for Lincoln Red Imps of Gibraltar in a domestic Champions Pathway game, literally the day before. So he had his thunder stolen a bit there. But he's the youngest ever starter in the competition, and then he became the youngest ever goalscorer. So, and those lists include pretty impressive names. I would get them up, but I haven't done my planning before this. But I think off the top of my head, it includes the likes of Youssoufa Moukoko, who obviously broke in to senior football as a 16-year-old when he was first legally allowed to play in German football. They got him in like a day after his birthday. And did he score? I can't remember. But yeah, he's one of the players on the list. There's loads more that are players that have gone on to real relevance in recent seasons. And yeah, Daumann is relevant right now because he's breaking records. He's already playing under-18 football on the regular for Arsenal. Last season, he was part of that sort of Chido Obi double threat thing where they were just killing teams 7-8-0 at times. Again, he was doing it as a 14-year-old. I think he made his debut as a 13-year-old at the under-18 level for Arsenal. Basically, he's on the fast track. He's doing stuff that is really eye-catching, that's really outstanding. Again, I haven't really watched him beyond like match highlight comps, but I'm really excited to watch Arsenal PSG this coming week now. Next week, because it will be my first chance to actually sit down and watch him for hopefully 90 minutes if he's involved. And yeah, he's on the fast track. He's playing up for England as well. He's playing under-17s for England already. So he's playing 3 years up in that age group. Yeah, for him to be doing that for club and country is really impressive, especially when the club is Arsenal and the country's England. So definitely one to watch.
Just looking at the youngest goal scorers, you gave me the opportunity there to sort of go into the Youth League archives and to get up just a list of players who scored in the Youth League before their 16th birthday, which is still, you know, playing 3 years up effectively. And you were right, Youssoufa Moukoko did score at the age of 14 and 11
Ryan
months. Ryan Cherki is number three on that list. The year he was 15.
Francesco Camarda should be there.
Yes, he was. He did score for Milan in the, I think it was match day one of, in fact, it was match day one of last year's competition in the 4-0 win over, I don't know, some team from the northeast of England. I can't remember who that was. there was also Luka Vuskovic. He also scored. But then some huge names, you know, like Ryan Gravenberch back in his Ajax days, 2017. He was 15, playing in the youth league at that time. You know, you've also got the likes of Warren Zaïre-Emery, you know, from 3 years ago when he was still scarcely believable 15. Regan Heskey at Manchester City last year. Who else did we have? Jack Aitchison. Oh, that's a blast from the past. If anyone remembers that, that would be very interesting. And then, you know, the likes of Ansu Fati scored just after his 16th birthday. Jolyn Dahle, Matthijs de Ligt, Elias Moriba, Fabio Silva, Enzo Milo.
If you go through the debutant list, then you've got the likes of Sverre Halseth Nipan, obviously Football Manager legend. People will know him, but he's also very good in real life. For Rosenborg, he made his debut as a 14-year-old in 2021, which is remarkable. But that list also includes Shola Shorataya, ex-Manchester United now, Evan Ferguson, back when he was playing for Bohemians in the Republic of Ireland, Milos Fila, another Football Manager legend. He's at Roma now, where he made his debut for Anderlecht. You got Mikey Moore, now of Spurs, always of Spurs. But he looks like, well, he is a really good talent within the Spurs Academy. He's the probably one that's on the break it, knocking at the door of senior football. And then you got Lamine Yamal down the bottom then. I think he's the 23rd youngest, which is pretty remarkable. He made his debut as a 15-year-old and 1 month old. So, but as I said, for what Daumann's doing is pretty special. Obviously, it doesn't really mean anything. Like you can play when you're young, but I think it probably does mean something.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. You're not going to be promoted to that level and have the trust of your coach. Because let's not forget, a lot of these coaches that are managing the youth league teams, you know, they will have aspirations to coach at a higher level as well. And their judgment is going to be called into question if they do put this 14 or 15 year old in and they're not ready. So I think they have to be utterly convinced of, you know, players like Diamond's potential and, you know, ability right now. I always come back to the conversation that I had on this podcast with the former Exeter City boss. And he was saying, you know, about Ethan Ampadu, you know, it wasn't about how much he did right. It was about how little he did wrong at 15 playing at senior football in League Two. And that kind of, I think that is always something which is in the back of my mind when I'm watching, you know, younger players playing up several age groups. It's how much are they getting wrong? And if the answer is very little, then, you know, it shows good game intelligence. And it shows that, you know, this is the reason why they have the backing of the coach as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Who else, or rather, which other game, considering that we couldn't watch that Atalanta-Arsenal game because it wasn't broadcast anywhere, which I know is a big bugbear of yours, Lou.
Yes.
that was a very knowing yes. where else was your attention drawn during the... in fact, you know what? I'm going to quickly tell a little anecdote of my own. So obviously, in the roundup, saw a few screen grabs of the Monaco versus Barcelona game at Youth League. 4-3 win for Monaco. Fantastic, brilliant. That's culture. Two massive teams with European pedigree, with great academy setups. And immediately I noticed the stunning backdrop, as Jake, Jake Entwistle, scouting analyst, has written, the stunning backdrop of the development pitch carved into the side of La Turbie's mountains. Now, over the summer, I was in the south of France, just on holiday, away from football, away from everything. And as I'm driving up to this little village in the mountains, just above sort of like Monaco and close to Nice, quite close to La Turbie, actually, across the sort of the, I don't know what you'd call it. It's not a valley because it was near the coast. That's really showing up my geography there. across the valley, there was sort of, all the passengers in my car were like, that looks like something like a facility. I took a very brief glance because I was not confident at all at driving on the opposite side of the road. Took a brief glance for a second, thought, where are we in the world? Oh yeah, that'll be Monaco's training ground. After a quick sort of Google from one of my passengers, about 30 seconds later, they confirmed it was in fact the Monaco training facility. And let me tell you, from up a height, looking down on it, it is absolutely magnificent. I felt like it may have only been a split second, but I felt like I was sort of viewing it from a drone. It is a really, really state-of-the-art facility that they've got there. And, you know, if there's anybody from Monaco listening, a tour around the place would be very much appreciated for myself, Lou, Steve, Jake, Tom, the scouted gang. It's a real place. But that enough about me. Where else were your attentions drawn to during match day one of the UEFA Youth League, Lou?
I'll touch on Manchester City against Inter a little bit. A bit of a surprise in some ways that Inter won it 4-2. It was a bit more of a surprise after Man City went 1-0 up within the first minute. I'm picking out this game a little bit because I think I tweeted about it on the account, but that first minute of football was just a microcosm of football in 2024. So you had Inter trying to build out in a very specific sort of pattern, going sort of like dot-to-dot football, which is pre-planned in the changing rooms on the training pitch. They basically cock up one of the passes, City jump, intercept the pass, and score straight away within a minute. And then, as well as that, City in their build-up had Jamai Simpson-Pusey, which is an interesting name, a fun name, but he's also a pretty good prospect. I liked him in last season's UEFA Youth League. I thought he'd be one that would be in senior football on loan this season. But again, he was sort of that age old, well, not age old, but 20, 24 old picture where the centre-backs just stood with his studs on the ball not moving at all, while there's about three of the first line of Inter defenders just watching him and literally nothing's happening. So I thought that was an interesting game, just for how it just encapsulates football in 2024. City looked pretty good going forward, but couldn't defend at all. That was their big problem. Any sort of Inter attack looked dangerous, whether it was set pieces, whether it was fast breaks, whether it was something a bit more possession-based. So that was interesting. I'll also touch on Feyenoord against Bayer Leverkusen, just because there was a couple of good prospects for Bayer Leverkusen, which I like the look of. I knew one of them, which was Francis Onyeka. He is a fairly heralded prospect within the German 2007 age group. He looked like that sort of slinky number 80, 10-y midfielder that can escape pressure, that can open up a game with some of his passing, with his like long-legged dribbling. He was good. And then the other one that I liked from this game was Artem Stepanov, who's a Ukrainian centre-forward that Leverkusen have signed from Shakhtar Donetsk in the recent years. And picking him out because he was just sort of this classic number nine profile. He's big, athletic, he can run, he can pound into the channels. He isn't some sort of Haaland sort of freak. I'll get that out there now. But he's just like that all-round centre-forward profile, which was really impressive. I really liked some of his link play, where he was giving that outlet for the direct pass, going over the top of Feyenoord's press, and then just doing like nice little, deft little sets off, and he was just spinning in behind and making the secondary movement. He looked good. And again, he's another one that I'm really keen to watch more of, because this is my first time watching him, first time ever hearing about him, in all honesty. But yeah, he was that sort of just classic number nine profile. That was a real handful for the centre-backs to try and get hold of. And he just gave Leverkusen that really secure outlet, particularly in the first half. And yeah, interested to watch more of that.
Just going back to Manchester City, that game against Inter, and this will take us on to sort of the next segment of the pod quite nicely. But just before we do, I mean, you were talking about fantastic names from the young central defender there. Here's another one for you from this starting 11. Farid Alfa-Ruprecht, the forward or right winger for Germany's under-18s. He's got 5 goals in 6 for Man City's youth teams this season, 3 in Premier League 2, and obviously a brace in the youth league in that fixture. He's certainly one who knows where the goal is this season. But he's playing on the opposite side to Jadon Heskey, Regan Heskey. Who, of course, it won't come as any surprise to know who he's related to. And as well, in central defence, alongside Simpson Pusey, there was Lakhyl Samuel, who's the son of former Aston Villa and Bolton defender J. Lloyd Samuel. And again, in that lineup that they had, was it Caden Braithwaite who played for Man City last night?
Yeah, they also had Nico O'Reilly, who started last night as well, along with Braithwaite. And then Jacob Wright, then, who came off the bench last night, he was playing as well. So again, it shows that there is that sort of pathway. Playing at a UEFA Youth League level is pretty high level. And yeah, to see these players going from under-19s to seniors within the space of a week is good. It's interesting. It's exciting.
Yeah, one of the quirks of this UEFA Youth League, and to be honest, in many years past, but this year it seemed to be really at the forefront, was familiar names. And again, maybe it's just a reflection that we're all getting older, and the march of time is relentless. but there were so many sons of former players involved in this match day one of the Youth League, that it felt like the scouted group chat was popping off every time a new lineup came out with, can you believe whose son this is? I mean, there was Alfonso Montero, who's a 2000-born central defender at Juventus, son of, I can tell who's written this, legendary Juventus and Uruguay centre-back Paolo Montero. Wondering if that one is our friend and colleague Steven Gnabry writing that. Paolo Montero, who's also the coach of Juventus's next gen in Serie C. And there were a couple of others. One that which you tweeted out onto the account there, Lou. Jaden de Guzman, PSV Eindhoven, son of the former Swansea City and Feyenoord and Villarreal midfielder, and the Netherlands, of course, Jonathan de Guzman, who I'm amazed he's still playing. I'm even more amazed that he's only 37.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, who else was there?
So there was a fairly niche one, but if you're of a particular Bundesliga vintage, then you'll remember Lucien Favre's Borussia Mönchengladbach from a decade ago, maybe 12 years ago, which was really fun. Had the likes of Marco Reus, and they also had that enigmatic Venezuelan free kick specialist Juan Arango. Does he ring a bell? Probably.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
Well, his son,
didn't he?
Just unbelievable left foot. His son, who's also named Juan Arango, scored for Girona in their debut UEFA Youth League campaign. I liked him at the under 17 World Cup last season. He's different to his dad, who was quite like that sort of like spindly sort of small frame, but the Juan Arango Jr. is a bit bigger. He's a bit more built. I didn't watch the game, but he scored. It's also worth mentioning that Zlatan Ibrahimovic's son started for AC Milan against Liverpool. His name's Maximilian. Maximilian Ibrahimovic. Again, didn't watch the game, so can't really say too much. But again, I'm starting to feel really old now with the likes of Zlatan's son and Jonathan de Guzman's son. And yeah, it is. It's getting a bit scary now.
Yeah. And if you were thinking, maybe it's just that, you know, these players had had kids quite young, and I'm not that old. And I still remember, you know, the 2005 Champions League final and the 2006 Champions League final. Well, going back to that Monaco-Barcelona game at the Monaco training centre, who were Monaco managed by? It would only be Liverpool's Jimmy Traore, of cult hero status. And then you might also think, okay, well, he might have taken his coaching badges pretty early. No, he's not. It's the Barcelona coach at youth league level of their under-19s, none other than Giuliano Belletti, the defender, fullback who used to play for Barcelona, obviously won the Champions League with them in 2006. And then went on to play for Chelsea as well. So, yeah, as I said, the relentless march of time is continuing, and we are all getting so very old. Lou, I think that's pretty much everything from the roundup of Match Day 1, at least in podcast form. Again, if you'd like a much more detailed breakdown, certainly comprehensive and unlike anything that you'll get anywhere else, then do subscribe to Scouted Notebook, and you will get these updates each week coming forward in the rest of the Youth League season. Obviously pinpointing interesting games, those of which are broadcast, of course, interesting players like your Adam Asnews, your Edmund Badus, and also these famous sons, many of whom might make their mark. But yeah, just in general, I have to say that the quality and the depth and is unlike anything else. And it's the way that in which they're written. It's analytical. It's they're like miniature scout reports for the mini Champions League, and it really does pique your interest. I do love keeping up to date with them. Given that, you know, during my schedule, I can't always watch the youth league myself. Certainly not in real time. But yeah, Lou, thank you for joining me and sharing your expertise and insight on this one. And I'm sure we'll be back in the virtual Scouted podcast suite in no time at all.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, just to echo your words, if you want more of this sort of stuff, then definitely subscribe to Scouting Notebook. There's loads more on there than we've just talked about, and we've spoken for nearly 50 minutes. So I think that sort of shows the depth of coverage that we offer. As I said at the start of the pod, like, what we offer is pretty unique. You won't get anything like this anywhere else on The Athletic or any other media outlet. So
Let's call them all out one by one.
I'll get a list of them. But just come and support us and come and find out the next generation of football. If you are jobless like me in terms of having your afternoons at 1 p.m. on a Wednesday free, then definitely try and watch the games. They're on UEFA.tv. There'll be 4 per match day available for free in the UK. So that's definitely worth watching if you can. If not, come check out our roundups and listen to our pods and whatever. Yeah, enjoy yourself.
That is the clearest come and get me plea to sporting directors I've ever heard.
I should put the caveat is I'm not jobless. I work for Scouted. I'm actually on the payroll. So I have got a job, but it does seem, doesn't it, look like I'm jobless.
And I'll tell you what else, sporting directors, because we know you're listening. His release clause is massive. So, you know, just be prepared to part with some serious cash for that database that's stored up in Lou's brain. No, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for engaging with us on Scouted. And as I say, do get on over to the Scouted Notebook for more comprehensive write-ups. This has been the UEFA Youth League Match Day 1 Roundup. Bye for now. The Scouted podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at Skill Corner, whose tracking data and performance analytics are used by many of the top clubs, leagues, and federations around the world. Covering a wide range of global competitions, Skill Corner's data helps customers to make faster, better informed decisions in recruitment, player development, and strategy. And we are now using it to support our own analysis of up and coming talent. For more information, visit skillcorner.com.